the World Wide Web. Welcome to Phantom Radio, presented by the Kegel Company, the number one lane maintenance company in the world. Well, Phantom fans, this week's special guest is a man who has a very impressive resume, and he's been involved in bowling his entire life. He is now a third-generation bowling proprietor, and at one time he had aspirations of becoming a pro bowler himself, but it's been through his outstanding writing that he's achieved a prominence in the sport. He majored in journalism at Northern Illinois University, and his frequent contributions to Bowler's Journal evolved into monthly assignments, and in recent years a column entitled PBA Insider, as well as a one-page preview of PBA regional activity known as the Regional Report, have been featured. And some of his earliest memories are going to watch his grandfather and his Hall of Fame father, Les, compete in the famed Chicago Classic League. And naturally, he took up bowling himself, and to this day, he continues to bowl in leagues and some PBA regionals. And our guest served as the PBA press director from 79 through 82, and another 3 years as the PBA's director of operations. He's a past president of the Bowling Writers Association, as well as both the Chicagoland and Illinois State Bowling Proprietors Association. And additionally, he's accumulated about 20 or more USBC and PBA Media Writing Awards. So, Phantom fans, here he is again, our good friend, Lyle Zeit. Hello, Lyle. Welcome back to the show.
Oh. Well, thank you very much, Phantom, for having me, and you're sounding good.
Well, I feel good. It's amazing. I'm still alive, walking around. I'm almost 80 years old. I can't believe it. All right, Bart.
I can't believe you're as old as you just claimed to be. I just don't believe that. But I think you're fudging forward a little too fast.
Well, I don't want to reveal it because, you know, I'm still eligible. Well, Parts, I really appreciate you taking the time to be here with us again on Phantom Radio. As you know, at the end of each quarter, we review a lot of what has happened in the bowling world, and it's that time again. So are you ready?
I hope so. I believe so.
Well, you're always on top of everything, and I'm going to ask you a few questions. Give us a quick review of a few tournaments, starting with the Team USA Trials.
Yeah, that would have been the beginning of January. So chronologically speaking, that would be the first major event that happened in 2018. Among the men, Kyle Troop won the tournament, a very exhausting tournament. You bowl for five straight days on a different lane condition every day, and your scores are tabulated based on the finishes that you have each day. So it was Kyle Troop leading the men, followed by A.J. Johnson, Jacob Butroff, and Darren Tang. And it's kind of definitely a common thread among those bowlers. They're all 20-something tour players. That was, quite an impressive group, and the fact that they're all interested and will be on Team USA, I think, says a lot about the desire for these players to compete for the U.S. team. The women's side was a little bit different. You had Shannon O'Keefe, who, of course, coming off a great year on the PWBA, a newcomer named Jordan Richard, and then some other veterans, Kelly Kulik, Stephanie Johnson, and Shannon Plowski were the top five. So you had the 30-something, maybe even 40-something in the case of Kelly Kulik, that still competing for those spots on Team USA, even though their resumes would probably get them on Team USA either way. So, but very great competition there in Las Vegas to kick the year off.
Fantastic. That's a great report, Barnes. I got a lot of things to ask you, so I'm going to rely on your memory. So let's go to the next one, and that's about the PBA event in Japan.
Yeah, so the PBA, well, coming off of the World Series of Bowling, but their first 2018 event was the DHC Japan Invitational, and name that I just brought up again, Kyle Troop. Now, he finished second to Dom Barrett in Japan. It was very highly contested. Barrett, I believe, just led the tournament overall by 4 pins over Troop, and then Troop won the match to get to the stepladder, but then Barrett won it fairly handily. So he gets, you know, sometimes, Phantom, I don't know about you, but when you start counting the European players, the Australian players, and their international titles, which count as PBA titles, I'm not positive how many titles it's for Tom Barrett. I know he's got several, both overseas and inside the U.S.
Yeah, he can bowl, no question about that.
Yeah.
All right, here's one that kind of brings a tear to my eye because I remember going there 40 years ago at least. Did you make it to the Tournament of Champions at Riviera Lanes?
No, I couldn't make it there. I did get to the next one. But Riviera Lanes, I loved watching that live show. I'm sure you did too.
Yeah.
And it was even a throwback with the way the audience was situated, like it was 1977 and Earl Anthony was top seeded again. In this case, it was Jesper Swenson that was top seeded, but Matthew O'Grady ran the table. Matthew O'Grady qualified out of pre-tournament qualifying because he only had regional titles on his record, went on, made the show, and then, let's see, among the people he beat were Belmonte, another name that's making an impact, Andrew Anderson, a very new name to professional bowling, but he shows up on not only this tournament, but he was active in the Team USA trials and did very well there and in another tournament that followed. But Matthew O'Grady gets the TSC championship, $50,000 for that. And I know you talked to him a couple of weeks ago. So,
yeah.
Great character.
I had never talked to him before. Sounds like a nice young man. Then I saw he won another regional right after that. He's up and coming, so we got to keep our eye on him, Pards.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, because I do the regional report for Bowler's Journal every month, I'm familiar with, he's the Eastern Region Player of the Year. He had gone to the finals of the regional championship in Reno a couple of years ago. So if you're, for those of us that following the regionals, or if you're already in the East Coast and you bowl those regionals, you already knew some about Matthew O'Grady, but to the rest, he's a new name. And like you said, he can play.
Yes, he can. All right, well, you jumped ahead of me because you know things about chronological order, so you already had in your sights the 60th anniversary event, so you went there, huh?
I did, and it was all that you could hope for. The dinner and ceremonies, the way they were able to produce the top 10 moments during the course of the evening, and then followed by the Hall of Fame ceremonies. There was also a period there when Carmen Salvino got on the microphone, and he just owned the room for 15 or 20 minutes. Believe me, you could have hired any comedian for $100,000, and he could not have had that room in bigger laughter than Carmen did with his stories. So that was just one of the many things that made it a great evening. And then, of course, you went on to the live telecast the next day. At that one, in this case, in Indy at Woodland Bowl, it was the top seeded player that prevailed. And the others, of those live shows, it was someone coming up the stepladder. But Jacob Butteroff earned the top seed by a bunch, not quite as much as he led the U.S. Open, but I believe this time he only led by 300 and some. And then he defeated Marshall Kent in the title game. Interesting, I mean, it wasn't designated as a major championship, which usually is when you've got the Hall of Fame ceremonies and the anniversary dinner attached to it, but it had everything going for it except officially not being a major championship because it's kind of a 60th anniversary as a one-time deal. I think there will be some other Go Bowling classics, though, in 2019, and we'll may get to that in a little bit.
All right, cool. I got to hand it to the PBA, the 50th anniversary ad. That was one beautiful function that I was at, and I'll never forget that. That was well done, and then I've heard a lot of great reports, including yours here, about how good this one was. So they're doing things in a big, beautiful fashion, and my hat's off to them.
Absolutely, and at the 50th, I agree with you on that. I remember that extremely well in Las Vegas at the Red Rock. You'd say it'd be hard to top that. I don't know that 60th topped it, maybe, but they were both outstanding.
All right, there's another big one that just went by a few months ago, the Players' Championship. What can you tell about that?
Yeah, that was really another really outstanding show. Barbasol Players' Championship right outside of Columbus at a bowling center that Wayne Webb has his name on. It's now connected to with an ownership interest. That was Thomas Smallwood. Tom Smallwood, who's made a lot of shows the last 10 years since he broke through this was his first title in a while, and I think only his third title overall, but it was a memorable one because every match was so close, including the last match against Jason Belmonte. Belmonte was top-seeded, bowled about as good a game as you could expect anybody to bowl. I don't think he expressed any disappointment, and he's usually can be critical of himself if he doesn't bowl up to his standards, but he bowled a fine game. Just Thomas Smallwood also bowled a fine game, and in the end, he edged him out. That was it was interesting because not only was the last match close, but Smallwood was winning these games by a pin or two or coming down to the 10th frame and needing a mark or what have you with each match.
That's for sure. All right, last but not least, how about the famous Roth-Holman doubles tournament?
Yeah, and that was set up so that the qualifying scores at the Players' Championship determined the teams. Now, the teams had to enter before the event, but then based on their qualifying scores, they determined the top 12 that would then separate after the Players' Championship and go into their own match play rounds. And, Belmonte had such a big lead, and Bill O'Neill was also bowling well. Bill O'Neill, I think, was alternate for the telecast. So they took a big lead in the match play. They continued to have a big lead, and then bowled on the telecast, which was taped, but now it's been aired. They defeated the Tang brothers, Darren and Michael Tang from San Francisco area.
Yep.
So O'Neill gets a title that takes him a little closer to eligibility for PBA Hall of Fame.
Yeah, well, he'll get.
And of course, Belmo gets another title. This one not a major, but it's another significant title.
For sure. All right. There's something here I heard a little bit about, but I don't know. I could never hold a conversation about it, but I know that you probably know about this new media rights package. Can you tell us what that's all about?
Well, this looks like it's a big thing. Of course, when you separate from a network that's been broadcasting you for 38 years, because I think it goes back to the very beginning of ESPN, and it wasn't because ESPN chased them off or anything like that. I mean, ESPN was quite willing to continue under the same terms, essentially, from the way I understand it. But Tom Clark and a person that he worked with, I believe his name is Ed Desser, negotiated with all of the sports networks, of which there are now quite a few. And the newest of those is Fox Sports Network. What came of it, it was announced in late March, is an extensive agreement, 4 years. The first year, and I believe throughout, it's going to involve some telecast, four telecasts on the major Fox network, the major network that you see NFL games on a weekly basis, along with 25 on Fox Sports 1. So that adds up to like 58 hours of television when you count 2 hours per show. And there's re-airs that will be going on with that. That's a lot of exposure for the PBA coming up beginning in 2019. There's some other details on it. The way it's going to be arranged, the PBA will still be in charge of producing the show, but in terms of the sales of it, it gets more focused on Fox Sports Network to be responsible for helping sell the show, rather than the PBA or whatever agency the PBA would use, and they've had a couple over the years. That, I think, is a bit of a relief for the PBA, who felt that they were sometimes in competition with themselves or within the bowling industry with the arrangements and the deal that they had with ESPN. And one other thing that that Tom Clark did, has pointed out since then, it's not anticipated that many, if any, of these shows will be against the NFL when they air. So in other words, the typical Sunday afternoon that where we got used to, watching PBA while maybe your favorite football team is on another channel, causing you some distress in some way or another, won't be happening. And in that sense, ESPN did use part of their schedule as what they, I think, term counter-programming, where they would air the PBA against some NFL games on Sunday because the PBA bowling would still get some kind of rating. Yeah. Obviously not as good as could have, in another time slot, but it would get something. So it was useful as far as counter programming. And with the Fox Sports deal, that isn't the plan for it. You know, very exciting. And Tom Clark did say that the way he views it, that if 10 years from now or 15 years from now, if there's a 75th anniversary, that one of the moments that they'll recall is the contract negotiations with that precluded this deal with Fox Sports.
Cool.
So it is it's kind of a relief in a way for you know, bowling fans, tour fans to know that, hey, it was kind of precarious there for a while. You know, when you don't re-sign, which is kind of what you were expecting, we've kind of been grown to expect that with ESPN. That when you're out in the marketplace and you actually don't know what's going on, you don't know what they're offering, what the possibilities are, and you walk away with this announcement and this contract, it's quite good news.
Yes, it is. You know, Parge, I wish we could have done this last thing I want to talk to you about on our show here. It's in March, Bowler's Journal, about you and Tom Clark having a discussion, a point-counterpoint discussion. Can you give us one highlight, because we're out of time, and I want to tease the folks to have them go read that article. I thought it was awesome.
All right. Well, yeah, you can probably tell from what I've expressed how, you know, much admiration I have for Tom Clark and the way he goes to bat for the PBA. And he's a great advocate for the PBA and the sport. I did take issue with one thing that he has said on more than one occasion, and that is he said he's been known to say, don't forget that today's players are so much better than the players in the past. And he's looking at, for example, Belmonte or Swenson or any Jay Tackett, whoever, and the way the balls enter the pocket and the way they blow up the pins, or just send messengers back and forth across the pin deck. And sure enough, yeah, no, Don Carter didn't do that, did he? Or Earl Anthony. My point there was that if, in fact, that had today's current style of bowling had been the best way to knock down pins, Anthony, Carter, and they were developing their games, or Dick Weber. If Dick Weber, to me, had been born in 1990 instead of 1929, I think his game would look exactly or very close to E.J. Tackett.
Yeah.
It's the era that you're in, and so I guess in a way I was defending some of, you know, the greats of the past. And sure, they didn't make the pins fly across the pin deck at warp speed, but they prevailed over the competition with the bowling balls and the lane conditions as they existed at the time. And that was the point counterpoint. And I think it went all right. And I think that that Tom Clark took it in the right manner and responded his way. And you know what? You got to give Tom credit for really believing in the sport as it is, and
sure,
going out there and battling every day bigger, better things for pro bowling as the game exists right now.
Oh, for sure. And I love Tom Clark, too. My sentiments are the same as yours. He's just 100% behind the PBA. But I'm also on your side on this, because they were great players a long time ago. They didn't need to do what these guys do today, because the bowling balls are so much different. Not only that, the lane surfaces are so much different. They used to have lacquer that were low friction. Now you got high friction surfaces, which leads to hook. So the people nowadays hook the ball. Back then, you had to be more accurate. So, you know, it was a great game then. It's a great game now. So I wish we could have done that thing on the show here, you and him going back and forth, because I read
that. Yeah, that would have been pretty interesting, yeah.
Yeah, I read the article three times. I loved it, Parge. But anyway,
oh,
the old clock on the wall tells me we're out of time, and I'm so happy that you're on here with us from time to time, Parge. You've got so much information, and that's what this show is all about, pass along knowledge and information. So hopefully I'll see you again soon, somewhere down the road.
You bet.
All right. Give my best to you.
And congratulations on your book.
Thank you. I'm working on another one. I got this guy. He's my partner now. And we're going to highlight the top 60 moments in this book.
Okay.
Yeah, it's going to be out in about 3 months. I'll send you the very first copy, my friend.
Okay, that'll supplement what the PBA did.
Okay, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
All right, well, Phantom fans, that's going to wrap up another show for this week, and I hope that you all enjoyed it. You enjoyed hearing from Lyle Zykes. Look forward to talking to all of you again next week. We'll have yet another interesting guest to talk to. In closing, we sincerely want to thank our sponsors, EliteBowling.com, Storm Bowling Products, and Brad Edelman for their continued support of our show, as we appreciate all that they do to keep us coming back to you each and every week. So, for Phantom Radio, this is The Phantom.